This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Barnabas Smith. And hey, it's great to have a chance to talk with you.
Thanks, Kate. It's really great to talk to you.
You're part of a group of dedicated musicians and composers who are researching music in video games in a very academic way, the Ludo Musicology Research Group. And I would go on and say more about it, but I'm sure you can do a much better job of explaining what it is and how it all got started.
I think you could characterize it as film studies sort of began by drawing on other disciplines, and video game music has kind of taken the same route. It existed prior to the coining of this term, ludomusicology, but it makes sense in a way that if you take ludology, the study of games, and musicology, the study of music, you end up with something like ludomusicology, which I think has acted as something of a bannerhead for the subdiscipline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still quite incipient. There are a couple of conferences internationally which are focused specifically on game music and game music studies. But otherwise, you sort of start to see it popping up more in musicology conferences, education conferences, that sort of thing. And I have been to the Ludo Musicology Conference a couple of times. I presented a paper there last year. They've just incidentally announced their 2017 conference in April in Bath. So fingers crossed I might be able to make it over there then as well.
That sounds amazing. And you were at the Southampton conference earlier in the fall. What's the audience like for this research? I mean, we could start by saying, well, who is the intended audience for this kind of research that you are, and the rest of the group are doing?
For a conference like the Ludo conference that is specifically focused on video game music, I'd say that the audience is primarily scholars, but there are a lot of non-academics there as well who simply come because they like video game music and they are keen to talk about it. It's a very broad palette of presentations and papers and academics. There's anything from a paper talking about Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty, some of the sort of real AAA studio games, right through to Undertale. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, really smaller indie games, which are gaining a lot of prevalence. And so I've been very fortunate in attending to listen to some very respected keynote speakers in the field, Mark Grimshaw, Karen Collins, Neil Lerner, some of these people who are published and who really have been at the forefront of game music study and getting things published insofar as textbooks. And they've been at a lot of these conferences, as well as often composers. So Stephen Basted does a lot of the Project Cars games. He has spoken at them. Andrew Barnabas is another composer, an expat from the UK, who's now based in the US, I believe. He was there last year. So it's kind of this great combination of academic interest and the scholarly pursuit of game music with practical Q&As with prominent game composers.
That sounds really interesting. And I can see how there would be a real need for that because the landscape of the game design industry has changed so much over the years. I mean, so many of the composers that I've been talking with for this series never intended to even be game composers, and they kind of fell into it. But now it's a really competitive field to break into. So I would imagine any sort of research or explanation or teaching tools that you and the group can offer for a young composer who wants to get into the business would be really, really useful.
There is a cool connection, I think, between the practical side of being a professional composer and an academic studying this material. There's a lot of go-between, and a forum like the Ludo Conference is an example of that. It's true, though, people like Hans Zimmer and Danny Elfman were known to do some game scores, but obviously they're primarily known for their film work, whereas people like Winifred Phillips and Austin Wintory, some of the really big names at the moment, Jason Graves, they've worked in other media as well, but of course it's video games that they're best known for. And I think at this time in history where game music is so big and receiving so much attention, and these composers are so accessible for fans via social media and, if you're lucky enough, live concerts, that sort of thing. There is so much opportunity to connect and share. And I think you may see that more with game music than other forms of popular culture and music, in that there's something inherently connective about game music. You can pursue the line of study that supposedly states that if you're engaged in a cognitively demanding task while listening to music, you connect with the music more readily, and it stays with you. And then you can sort of connect that with engendering deeper emotional connections. And so, in a way, you can argue that game music actually is one of the most emotionally connective forms of music there is.
The other thing that I really love about it is the way that it exposes players to all different kinds of music. I mean, there are the classical referenced types of pieces, but then in a lot of game scores, you'll hear all kinds of amazing things that you might not even have known about, like Tuvan throat singers or absolutely incredible percussion and that kind of thing. So there's a real kind of tangential learning aspect to game music as well.
I have taught in secondary schools for a few years, music primarily, but some other subjects as well. And one way that I began to really reach my students who were typically disengaged from music studies, particularly perhaps surrounding classical music and the orchestra, and I would use game music. And listening to, as you say, an orchestral score, you can do all of the same analytical, carry out the same analysis practices that you would with a game score, as you would a film score or a classical piece. You can talk about the Baroque and the Romantic and all of these different influences, and you can evidence it in this game music. And as you said, game music really is pushing a lot of boundaries musically. And I think a lot of composers at the moment are starting to really reach out and try to create different sounds and to change the soundscape of game music. Jason Graves using instruments which had no, I believe, no metal or plastic for the score
Oh,
to
Far Cry Primal. Yeah, he used
Far
rocks
Cry Primal.
and dirt.
Exactly. And omitting violins in his score for the Order 1886, for example, and sort of create that Bach's Brandenburg Concerto number 6, I believe it was, that type of sound.
Thank you.
when you think about it, this may have been on one of your interviews, actually, I was listening to. Someone was saying that the orchestra really hasn't been used that much in game. It's probably only maybe 10 to 15 years that the orchestra has been used as such a primary musical tool in games. But already, as you say, we're seeing such a diverse range of scores and instrumentations, sonic aesthetics that composers are going for.
Yeah, it's really, and it's an amazing time, I think, to be a game composer, because it seems like there really are pretty much no limits and anything's possible, especially if you're working with a studio where they're like, yeah, throw us your stuff and we'll tell you if it's too far out there.
I just was thinking of one discussion that's going on at the moment in the industry, as well as in academic circles with game music, is what determines an indie game now and an indie game score. When you think of something like Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, it was technically an indie game on a smaller budget, not a AAA studio, but Jessica Kari's score received a BAFTA award, and it's such an immensely popular game. And it's interesting, I think, to see what fans think then, because, of course, as soon as something becomes popular, you will tend to lose some of that fan base who really only want to pursue the niche, underdog, indie-type scene. And when a game potentially achieves a lot of commercial success, they might not be as keen on it anymore.
Yeah, that's kind
of an interesting shift.
It is. It's kind of a weird irony. And actually, Jessica told me that since she got her BAFTA award, she's gotten all kinds of commissions from choral societies in England for music, but no other game jobs. So I think that's, that's kind of interesting. But your particular area of study, I think this is really interesting, is the Grand Theft Auto games, and in particular, GTA 5. And I would love to know what it was about the way the music was used in that game that really hooked you and got you studying it in such a complex way.
Oh, firstly, thank you, Kate. I really appreciate your commendation. It's something that I've really sort of fell into by chance in a way. I wanted to pursue further study in some form. I'm actually a trained jazz drummer, but I didn't feel that I could pursue that and that it would fulfill me for the amount of time that I wanted to study. And I started playing Skyrim when it came out, The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. Mm-hmm. And that was really the first instance when I realized that this score, which I fell in love with right away, acted dynamically and was responsive to my actions, but it also maintained that consistent aesthetic throughout the game world. And so through a series of events, I eventually wound up studying a master's degree on a number of open world games, including GTA 5. And then primarily based on my propensity to keep referring to GTA 5 as this optimal example of game music implementation, my supervisors eventually said, why don't you just do that one? You keep coming back and saying how good it is. And so that's how it came to be. The exciting thing about studying the GTA series is that not a huge body of work exists around it. GTA 5 is the first GTA game to have a score, and there are all sorts of discussions in academic circles about what delineates a score or a soundtrack. The score for GTA 5 was created by a number of DJs, essentially. DJ Shadow and Ono and Woody Jackson, who, of course, has worked with Rockstar before on the Red Dead Times, etc. And so it's an interesting situation. I've spoken to groups of people about it who've kept referring to it as, so when you're talking about this orchestral score, you mean, etc. I have to keep saying, no, it's not orchestral, but it's still a score. It functions in the same way. It commentates on the narrative, and it supports the setting, etc. There's also more music in GTA 5 full stop than any other GTA game. And a lot of people speak very fondly of playing Vice City for the first time and getting in touch with that 80s nuanced world, that sort of Garth-based type. Well, yeah. But what a lot of people don't realise, I think, is that a game like GTA 5 is still as responsive to the setting of the game. But of course, it's contemporary Los Angeles. So there are more LA-influenced music and musical genres and radio stations to fit the setting.
And it's interesting because it really just I think of all of them, it seems like it has the most fun telling the story, and it really just sort of illustrates and kind of points out how ridiculous life in contemporary LA can be too. And the music itself has this really wonderful sort of lively vibe to it. The music that was written by Woody Jackson and Tangerine Dream that gets mixed in with licensed music.
And that's very cool, the way it was done. There was one particular mission, I had to give a presentation somewhere, and I use this mission as an example where you go through various stages and the game engine dictates that you switch from the protagonist, Michael, to Trevor, etc., back to Michael. And the music, as you say, would fade in, and all of a sudden you're listening to this LA crime-based score, which is very exciting, and then the score fades away, and seamlessly you enter a vehicle, and then a particular song is cued by the game engine to suit the narrative, something about getting away or hiding or running or something, and then again the score will fade in at another point in the mission. It is incredibly sophisticated, and that's really what drew me to this game particularly, I think. Just the fact that it's such a sophisticated use of music in providing both the setting of the game and a cinematic gaming experience.
Yeah, and the radio stations that you can tune in as you're driving around give it a real sense of place as well. And the other thing that I noticed with it is that the game sort of trains you to drive from place to place, because when you're walking, there's no music at all. So if you want to hear the music, you've got to get in your car and tune into one of the radio stations. Yeah,
that's true. Whenever you hop on a bike, you realize this is kind of cool, but I actually just want to listen to the radio as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that evidences the cool factor. And having people like Bootsy Collins and Kenny Loggins, it really does add that cool factor, which Rockstar has just got down to a T.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the challenges for a composer in a game like that with licensed music is to try to make the music that he or she is writing kind of blend with the licensed music. So that's another particular challenge that they have to work out.
I've read an article, an interview with Ivan Pavlov from Rockstar, saying that they really didn't want the score to compete with the radio station palette, but complement it and act in more, I believe, as a cinematic tool, which, again, a lot of people don't realize happens in this game. I say people very generally, but, you know, anything from my friends who are gamers to academics who simply haven't looked at GDA think that it is this violence-ridden, you know, it's the game where, yes, you can run over people and shoot things, all of that sort of thing, but they don't realize how deep and multifaceted the narrative has become in these games, and how this virtual ecosystem is brought to life by the music populating the radio stations and, as you said, the score.
Yeah, and it's an interesting challenge for the composers, the ones that I've talked with anyway, because they have so many hours and hours of gameplay to cover with their music. And so a lot of times they'll write little stems or short cues and then turn it over to the designers, and then the engine kind of sifts through it all and decides what's the best piece at a particular time. And I'm wondering if you have been able to delve into that with your research as well.
That is, to a large extent, the way the score was developed, I believe, in GTA 5. The tracks would be sent from LA to New York and essentially mixed and mastered there. They were very raw tracks. I think I read somewhere maybe 7 or 8 stems for one cue, and the Rockstar Advanced Game Engine, which was updated for the game, would mix them on the fly once the tracks were implemented into the game engine. And again, I think a lot of people don't realize just how sophisticated a process that is and how much goes into that. As you say, a lot of game composers will write a lot of music, which you may hear some of, you may hear most of, you may never hear any of it. I think Woody Jackson's work on Red Dead Redemption probably had a large influence on this process, and creating, obviously, for that game, all the stems were created in the same key and the same meter. But I think that process of having stems which really work well with one another and can be interchanged very seamlessly by the game engine worked well for GTA 5 and again created that cinematic experience.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I'm just curious, how many hours have you spent playing GTA 5 to be able to really get inside the music?
I 100%ed the game on Xbox 360. I have completed the campaign on PC and a few of the side missions, and I was playing it on PS4 for a little while as well. So probably a couple of hundred hours, maybe. I've played at least, I think, about 320 hours of Skyrim.
Oh, me too.
As a comparison, yeah, exactly. And that's really, I think, what helped me be drawn into this world, where you just spend so much time listening to this music, it eventually just seeps in and becomes such a part of your association with that world. And I've been able to do that with GTA, despite the fact they are primarily licensed songs. Yeah, I think one of the ways that Rockstar does that is by having real-world hosts. And Kenny Loggins will reference a process he went through in writing a song in the real world and then play the song in the game world, while also talking about how it's a sunny day in Los Santos today. And there's this great confluence of worlds which creates this sort of seamless interaction of popular music.
Well, that right there, I think, in a nutshell, illustrates why people love games so much, because you can really just dive into them. And when it's a great game like GTA 5, you can just lose yourself for hours and hours. And obviously not every game is like that. And not every game has hours and hours of, you know, hundreds of hours of gameplay. But it certainly illustrates why people love playing games, I think. So what are you imagining is going to be the next step with this research for GTA 5?
My argument is that GTA 5 is so sophisticated and its use of music is so comprehensive that a new model needs to be created to adequately study it. And so while it's in the early stages of development, I am developing this model which will look at music in GTA and take into account that there is a soundtrack and a score and stingers and all of the other elements of music, environmental music, etc. And so hopefully the end goal of my thesis will be not only to outline this model and apply it to GTA 5, but then have the opportunity to apply it to other open world games. And I think that's probably where my heart lies. I do love first-person shooters and strategy games, but open world games, which are enormous sandbox style games that can be explored with vast amounts of music and a lot of player freedom and opportunity. I think that's really where my heart lies in terms of gaming, particularly at the moment. And so it makes a lot of sense for me personally to be looking at GTA, of course, in that sense. But I also want to bring GTA 5 to the fore of academic notoriety. I think the GTA games have received scholarly interest in the past, but not as much as they deserve, and particularly the last couple of games, say GTA 4 and 5, could really be exploited as primary examples of the use of music in realizing a synthesized environment.
Wow, that sounds fascinating, and it sounds like you'll be busy for years to come. So,
I think so. As long as they keep making games.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's always going to happen. There's always new games. So, Barnabas, wow, yeah. It has been really so much fun to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kate. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, this is an aspect of game music that I had no idea even existed, and I think what you guys are doing is really fascinating.
Thank you, Kate. It's an honor to be on your show, and all the best with Respawn.